Safety Program with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is TNT Radio. This is D Program. My name is Michael Parker. I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California, United States, planet Earth, third stone from the sun. And whether you are listening here in the United States, in Europe, in Australia, wherever you are, I thank you for being here with us. And these are complicated days with big questions, and we're doing our best to try to talk about these as open adults. And before we are joined by Thomas Allison and rejoined by Rhonda Hampton, I got to run down a couple of quick news stories for you that are just odd, that are poking out to me as weird. So there's this video that has circulated on YouTube that came from a group that calls itself the Fourth Psychological Operations Group, known as PSYOP. And this is in Fort Bragg, Fourth Psychological Operations Group Airborne. So this is a recruitment. So this is aimed at, you know, young men and women who may or may not want to join the military. So this video, if you see it, I watch it. It's 2 minutes long. It looks like cross between a horror movie trailer, a video game, and a rock video. It's dark. It's got occult imagery. It opens with a Sun Tzu quote. And bottom line is basically what this is, a PSYOP group making a recruitment video to get people to come into the military. And I think part of me wonders, is this a joke? Are they serious? Is this to test the waters? Is it to get people like me to talk about it? All of the above. PSYOPs are a thing. And I think, you know, it's unfortunate that there's so much of this, but this particular story, and you can look it up, you'll find it. A lot of people are talking about this thing. They basically admit, in the video itself, it says, have you ever wondered who's pulling the strings? You'll find us in the shadows at the tip of the spear. Anything we touch is a weapon. We can deceive, persuade, change, influence, inspire. We come in many forms. We are everywhere. And they speak to a guy who's part of this. His name was Colonel Chris Stengel. He told this news outlet, the video is purposely vague. It demonstrates that a big part of psychological operations is creating persuasive media. I don't know, man. I as if we need any more PSYOPs, and maybe they're just trolling guys like me who have radio shows, but it's getting a lot of attention. It's super weird. Maybe they're just having a laugh at us. I don't know. Here's another one. So Google is making us all feel better in that DeepMind says it's close to achieving human level artificial intelligence, but it still needs to be scaled up. So DeepMind is this British company. They got bought by Google. One of their main guys, this Nando DeFreitas, he's a research scientist there. He recently said this week, game is over. We've solved the hardest challenges in the race to achieve artificial general intelligence. So artificial general intelligence means that a machine or a program now has the ability to understand, learn, and accomplish tasks as the human mind does. Some other people are saying, not so fast. Yes, you've got a novel program software piece here, but it's not as good as what is being advertised. A guy from ZDNet, columnist Tiernan Ray, said, you know, this agent is actually not so great on several tasks. They, for one thing, they give this thing photos, and then it has to caption the photo. And apparently this software captions things in really obscure ways. So I guess we could all breathe easier a little bit in that our tech overlords and artificial intelligence transhumanist future is not as close as they'd like it to be. We'll have to wait and see. Vice is reporting that a 830 million year old microorganism found in Australia, which this network is based in Australia, and we have many Australian followers. So these 830 million year old organisms were found in Australian rock salt, and they may still be alive, if you can believe that. If they're not alive, they may be able to reanimate them, which then leads to the possibility of finding organisms like this on other planets like Mars, because these organisms can be shielded within pockets of gas or fluids, and these things are extremophiles, which mean they exist within very extreme environments. I mean, the whole thing. I mean, 2022, we don't have flying cars, but we got AI. We're going to reanimate billion-year-old organisms, and we've got the military running psyops. I mean, I have to laugh a little bit, because if I don't, I'll cry. But anyway, that's the news. I try to bring you guys interesting stories at the top of the hour that just pop out to me, because that's how we roll here. This is TNT Radio.
Stay up to date on the latest news.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, so here we go. This is the second hour. I am going to be joined by Thomas Allison. He is running for judge here in Los Angeles County. I am rejoined by Rhonda Hampton. She is a clinical psychologist. And Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So I've been reading a lot about you, and you have an extremely impressive background. And so you are licensed in five states: California, Nevada, New York, Washington, Washington, D.C. Tell us more about yourself, and so we can get to meet you, know you.
Sure. Thank you for having me. This is indeed an honor.
Well, sorry that you're here.
I was born in Los Angeles in Martin Luther King Jr. Hospital. I guess a quick fact, I was held by Coretta Scott King when I was a baby. My mother was a single mother, and so she had she'd taken me to a appointment that she had and didn't have a babysitter or anybody to watch me. And Coretta Scott King just so happened to be there and stepped in and held me and watched me while my mother went into her doctor's appointment. So
that's beautiful, man.
It kind of starts from there.
You were destined for this. You were destined for good, great things.
Exactly. You know, we lived in LA for a bit. You know, we were poor, and we had a drive-by at our apartment. I remember at a young age coming home from church, heading into our apartment, and just gunfire right above us. And so after that, my mom moved us up to the high desert. But we were, despite our circumstances, very heavily into the church. I started preaching at a young age and then became a licensed and ordained deacon as a teenager. My folks did a really good job of insulating me from a lot of the social factors that was happening around me. And then I ended up going to college, studying business there, engaged in the debate team and the football team, got to travel the world as a debater, became a national finalist, which basically paved the way for me to get to law school. And then after law school, I started my own firm directly out after passing the bar. I started my firm with about $1,000 and eventually ended up growing that firm into a 5-office multi-state law firm that sent me all over the country practicing different areas of law. So I've had a blessed life so far. I think it's only getting better.
Right on, man. I like your attitude. So tell me this. You've got great things happening for you. You are clearly a born leader, and you like giving back and serving. So why run for this race now? What if you are another thing that I read on your website was interesting is there's two ways that judges can become judges. You could be appointed or you can be elected. So you want to be elected. Tell me about that as opposed to appointed.
Absolutely. I think elections have a vital community function, right? Mm-hmm. This is the way for the collective body to express their will. And I think there needs to be more of a connection between the community and the courts. A lot of what's happening in courts are generally done in an adversarial system where you have one party versus the other. They battle it out, and then the judge makes a decision. This is helpful in some circumstances, but in most circumstances, it's not. You know, when we think about our family law cases, very rarely is it going to be helpful to have a mom trashing a dad or a dad trashing a mom with the sole intent of having the judge give them a particular order, right? That's not better for that family. That's not better for the kids involved. And so when we think about the community's role in justice, I think the court stands best positioned to make that connection. When we talk about the types of cases that we have and this is just a I'm not going to get too much into policy, but you know, when we think about all of the churches who have mentorship programs, yet all of the fathers out there in need of mentorship, or the women in need of mentorship, we have all of these resources in the community, and very few referrals are made to connect our cases to those community-based resources.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like a commonsensical connection that could be used to mitigate how many cases we have in our court system, right? But we're not thinking that way because we have the system thinking within the system. We have the community operating within the community, and very little cross collaboration. And that I think is a abundant waste of resources.
Well said and well thought out. I like that. That's common sense application of, I like it. Rhonda, I want to give you a chance to ask some questions as well to Thomas, because I believe that you guys know each other, because I think that we found Thomas via you. Thomas, we're going to learn more about you. And by the way, we have plenty of time. So if you want to talk about policy, that's cool too. But Rhonda, I want to give you the floor for a second.
So, I mean, and I was really impressed that you were running for judge. I was surprised that actually that you were running though. I was surprised. And I got the invitation to show up to one of your speaking engagements. And I was amazed by what was coming out of your mouth. I do want to ask you very, very specifically, and I think Michael Parker has asked that, but I'm going to ask again, why are you running for judge? And that's in lieu of all the great things that you're doing in the community, because to be honest, like, it's like, okay, you're going to be judge, but then what about all this other great stuff that you're doing? Like, I'm afraid that stuff's going to, you know, not happen anymore.
Well, I think a lot of what I'm doing could happen as a judge. Right? I'm on a speaking circuit. I like to engage with youth. How many youth can say, especially from marginalized communities, that they've ever talked to a judge outside of a courtroom, mm-hmm. right? How many domestic violence victims, or how many reform perpetrators or families or individuals who lack current access to the system can say they've ever sat in a conversation with the judge? And that's has a lot to do with what I'm running. Why I'm running is because as a judge, I think it amplifies that message and that platform better. And I think it better connects it to the system itself. I've had a few people ask me, you know, why running for judge? Like, you know, in fact, I had a newspaper say, a very conservative newspaper say that they believe I'm a great guy. I've shown intelligence and leadership skills. And they see me having a role in government service, but they think I should be running for a local political position or a statewide partisan position. Mm-hmm. And so my thinking there is, we have people there that are connected a lot with what it is that I'm connected with, the ideology of community-based resources and community intervention. Like, that's already a trend in our law. We're trending that way. However, there's a disconnect between those laws and the people interpreting and applying those laws. When you have a diverse electorate and a diverse legislature developing laws for a diverse community, but you have none of this diversity on the bench, then it stops just short of realizing the outcomes that it's designed to realize, right? So we need more diversity on the bench, but we need highly intelligent people who are not only passionate about the law, but passionate about community progress and improvement, to say, how do we marry these two conversations in such a practical way that we'll begin to see social outcomes through our cases? And that is particularly why I'm running for judge. Having education in public administration means that I not only understand the law and how it functions because of my years of practicing and being a trial attorney, but I also understand how the system functions beyond and inclusive of the law. And therefore, when we talk about collaboration, that's what I've been studying in all of my public administration education, right? Collaboration has been my theory of choice, collaborative governance and collaborative rationality in particular. Right. So if the solution here is collaboration and cross-system thinking, then I think we need more people outside of the system to say, how do we connect this with what's happening in the community for us to realize those better social outcomes?
If I could follow up what Rhonda said, it's Thomas, I have been pleasantly surprised. Everybody that I've met as a result of this show who is running for public office, I have really liked, and I'm one of those guys, I'm super skeptical of everybody. I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican. I kind of don't like anybody across the board. There's like a handful of people that I like. And of course, I'm just a wild, crazy guy on the radio. So when I meet people like you and I meet these other people that Rhonda and Cece have brought to me and a couple of people that I've reached out to as well, all running for office and positions within Los Angeles, I got to tell you, man, I'm stoked because I was, you know, I admit I'm a bit cynical these days and I've seen so many things that and so many people that I've been disappointed in that I'm always pleased when I hear somebody like you who, man, I think, you know, you're sincere. I wish you well. It's like, this has been a very pleasant thing for me to see. You answered that question great.
I appreciate that.
You were reminded me of when I was in grad school and one of my fellow students was telling me how he got to become a psychologist. And the story he told me like really hit home when you're saying this right now is that when he was, 19, he got a DUI, right? And it was a pretty horrific thing that happened. And when he stood before the judge said, I can go one or two ways with you. This could be very criminal and you could, have a life of crime or you can make something of yourself. So I'm gonna give you an opportunity. So he sent him to do charity work at a church and also at a hospital to work with people who were injured by, in various forms. So he had to do this work. And it is that experience actually that got him into the direction that he wanted to work with people and now has his PhD in psychology and is definitely changed his life. And it's interesting because he's told me that story so many times. And until you just said that right now, I was more focused on the outcome from him as opposed to the judge that made the decision that changed this man's life. So it makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. And there are some great judges on the bench that have done those same things. You know, that is an example. But if that thinking was widespread throughout the system, how many more people who are currently locked in cages could be providing resources to the community rather than us being taxed to care for them beyond the walls? They could be paying taxes to contributing to a greater society, right? And that's what I'm about. I think there should be more consideration of what the outcomes are as opposed to the political influences and factors that have us take a side and just want to sit on that side.
Thomas, I always like to ask folks to kind of, because we forget, we're super busy and man, it's been a long time since I've been in civics class, okay? So your particular position as a judge for Los Angeles County Superior Court, what does that mean exactly? You are a judge, but fill me in on the rest of this. What is your jurisdiction? What are your boundaries? What does this mean exactly?
Yeah, so judges are assigned to their assignment by the presiding judge. So we run countywide. We have seat numbers that are really just there for administrative purposes, but the entire county is going to vote for judges. That in and of itself makes it a low information election because there's so many judicial candidates. You very rarely know anything about them or us.
Right.
And so people are going to select the judges. Those judges are going to go into the profession and then they're going to be assigned to a courtroom. And that courtroom is going to have a particular area of law. There are 9 different court departments. There are a number of different areas of law that judge can ultimately end up being presiding over. And so it really just depends on what that assignment is. From there, this is going to be the judge that is in charge of that courtroom, right? So judges don't only make decisions, they also manage the courtroom, right? And so we like to talk a lot about, you know, how much courtroom experience, how much litigation experience do you have? How many trials have you done? But I think another part of the question needs to be, what have you managed? What resources have you controlled? How are your interpersonal skills? You're going to have a staff that is working under your direction. And if you've been in a courtroom, you know these staff members are the people who drive the courtroom. But ultimately, it's the judge that regulates what happens in and around that court. And so what experience do our judicial candidates have in regulating the human condition and getting everybody on the same page to accomplish a particular outcome? You know, that is also, I think, a question that judges need to be asked, because we are administrators, right? And so when you think about what judges do, yes, we make decisions, yes, we follow the law, but it has a lot to do with making sure our cases get called, we finish our calendar in time, we keep cases moving through the system so there's not congestion. And then ultimately, there are the legal decisions that judges make in each of the cases.
There's a lot more to it than I thought. I'm speaking with Thomas Allison. He is running for judge. I'm speaking with Rhonda Hampton. We got to take a quick break. This is TNT. We'll be right back.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on the 21st of May.
Welcome to the latest edition of Who Wants to Be Prime Minister? That's right, today it's Albo versus ScoMo. Who'll be the first to stuff it all up?
Price of bread, $3.50. Cash rate, 0.1%.
All right, let's go, Albo.
Anthony Albanese, welcome to the show. How are you? Oh, yeah, I'm good, thanks.
You're good. 13% of the nation is living under the poverty line, and you're good.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know we'd started.
He didn't even know we'd started. He's not ready. He's not prepared.
I'm prepared.
And Scott Morrison, how are you?
Well, Andrew, I'm busy. Working day and night for all Australians. Unlike Take It Easy Albanese over here.
Devastating first round for Albo. ScoMo is in his element here. Just look at the way he works the media. They're eating out of the palm of his hands.
Albo, what's the current unemployment rate?
Well, the national unemployment rate at the moment is, it's 4.
Mr. Morrison?
Jobs. Oh, come on, that's not an answer.
All right, it's time for the speed round.
Albo, how much is it for a 45-minute Thai massage?
$85.65.
Scott, what has four wheels and flies?
A garbage truck.
Albo, what's the surname of the family of Malcolm in the Middle?
Wilkerson.
Scott, why does Michael J. Fox make the best milkshakes?
Well, he uses the finest ingredients.
Albo, what's heavier, a kilogram of bricks or a kilogram of feathers?
Bricks!
Wrong, they both weigh the same, you f***ing idiot! And Scott Morrison is the winner!
Right, that's it! This was supposed to be an easy win for me, and you're all making me look like a bloody idiot. How about instead of trying to trip us up and ask us dumb questions, you ask me some proper questions about our policies?
What's Labor's policy on Australian coal mining?
Mr. Morrison?
Okay, we're done. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
To find out more, visit onenation.org.au.
I've got muscular dystrophy. That means my muscles are weak and it can be hard to breathe. During COVID-19, kids like me are at a greater risk, but the Muscular Dystrophy Association is here to help.
MDA is what ensures they receive critical medical care at one of over 150 care centers.
COVID-19 won't stop us. Please visit helpmda.org.
What? Are you kidding me?
If you can't believe what you're hearing, then get the straight talk from us. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And this is the program. I'm back. I'm speaking with Thomas Allison. He's running for Los Angeles County Judge. I'm speaking with Rhonda Hampton, clinical psychologist. And Thomas, you bring up a big point. It's when these elections happen, oftentimes positions like yours, I mean, people, you know, they go to for the big headline, the governor, the president's race. And unfortunately, these races, which can affect us on a much more fundamental positive level, Unfortunately, we don't know everyone who's running, and that's unfortunate because this is our local level where we can actually implement some change. How do you combat that? How do you get the word out? I mean, I know you're on my show right now, and you're probably having to work day and night talking to people everywhere you can.
Yeah, it's a pretty arduous task, being able to get out and being exposed, such a large county. I really do think that it's going to require a shift, a fundamental shift in the way that we approach elections, right? Some many people approach elections almost like jury duty, right? How do I get away from this thing? You know,
that's right.
But if we were as a society more civic minded from the very beginning, you know, schools should, everything should be focused about elections. How do you do your research? How do you do your candidate or your candidate research? What role do these candidates play in our daily lives? That matters. One of the things that we hear a lot about it is the court, right? The mysticism of the court, almost as if
well said.
It's a completely separate thing, an ivory tower that, you know, rests out on a hill somewhere that we look up to its peasants. And that's because we all have the perception of the Supreme Court in our mind when we're thinking about the court, right? Yep. We're not thinking about the local judge who's going to tell us how our families are going to function. We're not thinking about the local judge that's going to set your fines for your driving penalty, right? I was talking to the president of the University of Laverne, who's a dear friend, and she talks about her first experience with the judge being 17 and getting pulled over, right? And that judge also gave her a break, and it's something that she remembers to this day. She doesn't violate the rules of the road because of what that judge did for that particular moment, right? When we think about judges in this context, then I think that people do take more interest in who these people are, but the court is shrouded in this secrecy that, you know, it doesn't really, it's not really congruent with how it functions in society.
Rhonda, would you like to follow up?
I do want to hear more. I want to hear, I've heard this and I'm just, selfishly want to hear, Thomas talk more about this idea of balance on the bench.
Please.
And I've heard that before. I love hearing about it. And I just want to hear about some more about that.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, when we're talking about the people who are making decisions in our lives, we want to see balance. We want to see diversity. We want to know that there's some life experience there, there's some life exposure, that when you get into the courtroom and you put on your case, you're not talking to somebody who's gonna look back at you like you're an idiot, right? You're gonna be looking at somebody who is engaged in what it is you're having to say. And the balance comes from, I may not have personal experience with your particular predicament, but I have enough broad experience to know that I don't know everything, or to know that my worldview is just that. It is my worldview, is not the way the entire world functions. And so having that balance means that you get more balanced decisions, you get more balanced outcomes, you get more balanced communications. The way things take place are happening in such a way that evolves with the times, as opposed to something that you feel disconnected from, right? And so balance, there's tons of different balance. There's professional balance, there's lifestyle balance, there's personality balance, there's professional, there's so many different ways that balance can come to the bench in order to better achieve case outcomes, or the desired case outcomes, I should say.
Thomas, he shared a story once about, I think the situation was the judge had ruled on a particular case, and I don't even think you were working on a case, but the woman didn't understand that she had actually won the case. That would be a great story, I think, to share.
Right. Yes, I was in court. I had a trial going, and a lot of departments do trials and have a calendar so that you get to hear some of the hearings being done before your trial is called. And I was in a family court one time, and, you know, I had listened to this case. It was pretty contentious case, very emotional. And then after I came out, it was on a lunch break. The woman was down outside in front of the courthouse crying, just distraught. And I asked her, you know, what was the matter? If there's anything I can do. And she's like, you know, the judge just took my kids. And I sat there and I was like, well, no, that's the exact opposite of what had occurred. And then she's, no, he took my kids and gave the father custody who they don't even know. And I told her, you know, ma'am, you're the actual petitioner in this case. And when the judge says the petitioner has sole legal and physical custody because of Family Code Section 3044, basically what the judge was saying was because there was domestic violence in your particular case, the father is considered unfit to have any custody. And he was therefore awarding you sole legal and sole physical custody. She was shocked. I absolutely mind blown. And I walked away from that like, that judge did a good thing in this case. And she walked away with such a vitriolic reaction to the court and to that judge because she had no idea the language that was being used and no idea what the outcome of that case was. That's not justice.
And it's unfortunate too, because I go back to this a lot, but I just know that many people, you know, we're busy, and when we're not busy, we want to watch some reality TV or we want to play a game, or, you know, it's just, there's so much on our minds these days. And many of us are not specialties or specialists in particular things. We know what we do. We don't know how other things work, and we don't know how, and we're not familiar with the language involved in those occupations or those situations. So a lot of times you go straight over our head, and it's easier to just kind of, I don't know, be negative towards it or just not learn. And so it goes back also, you mentioned the mysticism of the court. So when we're talking about legal language, which is, you know, complex, and then the almost mystical presence of the judge in the is it a cloak? Is it a cape? What do you guys call this?
It's a robe.
A robe. There you go. I'm sorry. Hey, man, it's morning time for me. Okay. Yes, the robe, of course. But anyway, the whole thing, and then, you know, the courtroom itself, it has a very stately, almost religious, metaphysical aspect to the whole thing. So, you know, I think for some people, it's hard to connect with that. And you make a good point that this woman didn't even understand that. So my question is, whoever was her lawyer didn't fully explain to her what had just happened?
You got to remember, in family court, most people are unrepresented, right? We most of the time when we think about court, we think about it in the criminal context,
yes,
where you're appointed a lawyer, but that's only in the criminal context. Criminal law speaks a different language. It has a different process, completely different standards and burdens of proof. In the civil side, you're not guaranteed a right to representation. And therefore, if you go sit in family courts, if you go sit in eviction courts, you're going to see people in there representing themselves.
Mm.
And so it's the court's job, from my perspective, not to take a side, not to be an advocate one way or the other, but to make sure both sides have access to equal information that's going to help them through this process. And that has a lot to do with the way that we communicate with the people who come in front of us, because we don't know what their background is. We don't know what their familiarity with the law and the terminology is. And so I think our default position should be communicating with them as if they have no legal background whatsoever. And hey, if you're a legal scholar and you understand all the Latin and the terminology and all that stuff, then more power to you. We can have that discussion as well. But for the most part, our default should be most people have no idea what is going on. Most people have not paid to go to law school for 3 years and have, you know, extensive amount of experience. And therefore, we should talk to most people as if they don't have that background.
You are the judge that I want to appear in front of if I ever have to do that.
I appreciate that.
And I just want to jump in. And as a psychologist, I have lots of opportunities to have clients who have to go before the court for various reasons. And I'll tell you that the judge really does make a difference from my perspective in terms of whether or not the client is going to be in compliance with whatever the judge orders. And sometimes, Thomas, it's like what you said, sometimes they just don't understand what the judge is saying. And I'm telling you, a lot of times I tell my clients, bring your court papers. Let's go through it to make sure that you get what the judge is saying. Some judges are awesome though. And you know, clients will say, this is what the judge, you broke down for me and said it in this way and told me what everything meant. I can tell you in my experience, most of my clients who have to go to court leave very, very confused. And like you said, in family court, they don't have money for an attorney. They just don't have that. And sometimes even if they do, they don't have an attorney that is articulating to them very clearly about what's going on. And sometimes it's just a misunderstanding that probably would only take the judge 2 minutes to explain, but that could cause a person to just feel defeated and not want to comply with the judge's order. So I hats off to you, because I really believe that's an important part of being a judge, is making sure that you're relating to the person who you have control over what's going to happen to their life. And they have to understand what you're saying. And you, to me, whether they have a law degree or not, they may not have it in family law, and they may not entirely get what's going on. And they have to. Yeah. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. One of the best things I've seen a judge do was prepare and give out one-sheeters. Whenever he made an order, he would give out a one-sheeter that spelled out what that order meant. Granted, nice. there was still jargon in it, but you can actually, you know, you could look up the terms. You know, I would take that a step further. Rather than having a page full of words, where are the pictures? Where's the visualization of the process and the system? You know, take that document and have it vetted by community organizations. Does this communicate what I wanted to communicate in the way that I wanted communicated? That way, when you come into my courtroom, I'm going to give an order. I'm going to have to say some jargon on the record in order to maintain the record. But then I'm going to immediately follow that up with a plain language explanation of what has happened, what the orders are, and how they're successful in fulfilling those orders. Then they'll get a written document that reminds them of what is going to be taking place. I started a justice center at ULV. I have a rule for my students. I mean, it's kind of hard, but my rule is we don't write to anybody in higher than a seventh grade reading level, right? Like, we're just going to assume that that's where people are, and everything is going to be in that way. So these one-sheeters are going to be in seventh grade reading level, and you're going to be able to read those and follow them. And then when you come back in my courtroom the next time, I'm going to look at you and say, well, what happened? Where was the disconnect? Because I gave you a one-sheeter that spelled out everything, and I asked you before you left, did you understand the content of that one-sheeter? And so that's going to be a higher level of accountability when it comes to compliance. But like you said, when you get into the court, I mean, and I'm not going to lie, I love it. Like, I love stepping into the courtroom. I love the respect. I love the process. I love all of that. But when you are a stranger to it, you don't want to slow it down. You don't want to ask questions. You don't want to be that person that has no idea what was just said. You're there to get in and get out for both sides. Right. And that's where I think another disconnect is between the community and the courts.
Thomas, when you say you love it, man, I like hearing that, because I want to vote for a person who loves doing this job, has reverence for the service that he is providing for his community. So don't shy away from saying that you didn't, but I like hearing that.
Yeah, I think reverence is the right word, right? Like, our system is only as important and useful as we trust it and revere it, right? And so it's not that we revere it to such an extent that we abdicate ourselves out of it or we exempt ourselves out of it, but we revere it in such a way that we respect the process and we respect what is happening. And that can only happen when there's a fundamental or foundation of trust between all the parties.
Agreed. And right now, that's what we need more of, is trust that the system is working and that we can abide by it because we know that it's working. You said something else interesting. We're going to have to go to break in just a second, but you mentioned that to your law students that you don't create a document that is above a seventh grade reading level. I had a publicist on yesterday, a PR specialist. We were talking about a different subject, some congressional hearings, but we were talking about hearings again. But anyway, his point was, he goes, you know, I tell my clients, I'm like, listen, when you're doing your marketing materials, do not put this at over, he said eighth grade, but point well taken. It's like, yes, it's the same thing as what you're saying. It's like, make it understandable. Let's just use this as our kind of our flatline baseline and keep it there. And then everybody can have an equal opportunity to understand it. You know what? We're going to go to the break 1 minute early because I want to give Thomas plenty of time on the other side I'm going to give him the floor and let him make his case even further and tell us what we need to know. This is TNT Radio. My program is Deprogram, and my name is Michael Parker. We'll be right back.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The primary elections on the 17th of May have produced some results of note. Thomas Massie's resounding win with 75% of the vote in Kentucky's 4th district is particularly important. Massie was endorsed by former President Donald Trump, which no doubt helped him in his battle against three other Republican Party challengers. The main challenger, Claire Wirth, attacked Massey's voting record in many areas, suggesting that he's a rhino, a Republican in name only. This was a bit rich, to say the least, considering Massey is one of the most conservative members of Congress. Two other important wins were for Senators Mike Crapo of Idaho and Rand Paul of Kentucky, both of whom, along with Massie, voted against the $40 billion so-called security assistance package for Ukraine, which in reality risks an escalated war between the world's nuclear-armed superpowers. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
You only put your son to bed 1 hour ago and he's woken up saying his tummy really hurts and he's got a temperature. You're worried. The 111 person you normally speak to isn't available. The surgery's closed. It's not an emergency, but you're not sure what to do. Then you remember the new free 24-hour NHS number, 111. They assess you and direct you straight away to the medical help you need. Your 111 relieved mum.
If it's not a 999 emergency, but you need medical help fast, there's now 111 number to call. When it's less urgent than 999, call 111. Now available on the Isle of Wight.
Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT? Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is our final segment with Thomas Allison. He's running for judge here in the county of Los Angeles, California. Thomas, just to be clear, because this one is on the 7th for you as well. This isn't in November. Is the election in June 7th for you?
That's correct.
And it is not a primary race in this case. This is the race, right?
It is a primary race. So,
okay.
If any candidate does not get 51%, then the top two candidates will go into the general election in November.
Okay. And I want to give you and Rhonda time to both talk about anything that we need to know more about you. And Thomas, you know, we got a lot of issues in Los Angeles. And I bring this, I'm glad I'm in Los Angeles because... And there's been many times that I thought about leaving. I'm not going to lie. But I'm glad that I have this platform to talk about the things that we do in Los Angeles because people love Los Angeles. People love to hate Los Angeles, but they do not ignore Los Angeles. So like what we do here has ripple effects. And so we're actually, you know, and I was one of those guys who was bummed out about things, but I can't tell you how relieved and uplifted I've been just doing this job and talking to people like yourself and Rhonda and the people that CC have brought on board, because it's made me less cynical. So in this remaining 12 minutes of this segment, I want you to be able to say whatever you need to say. I'd like Rhonda to join in and let's talk.
Sure. This is going to be a historic election. I think this is going to be a very different election. We've seen that vast majority of people who are elected are prosecutors or district attorneys. And that has a lot to do with the low information element of the election. 40 to 50% of people who show up to vote don't actually vote for judges, right? So it's not that, you know, there's a group out there who everybody just shows up and they're voting. We're seeing those who are even showing up to vote are not voting for judges. And so I believe that in this election, we're going to see a drastic reshaping of people's habits toward judicial elections. I think we're going to see historic outcomes in that we're going to see people get elected who are not just prosecutors. And that's going to have a lot to do with the fact that the public appears to be more clued in to the judicial elections. I think the fact that every registered voter in California received a mail-in ballot, right? That's going to shape, I think, participation in who people are voting for. Even just my website, I mean, we're getting, well, I mean, 10 times as many visits as normal on our website on a daily basis since ballots have come out, as we're used to seeing. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that people are activated in a different way. We're starting to see more community-based organizations involved in the judicial discussion because I think people are starting to recognize the difference. One of the reasons why I'm running and I'm so passionate and motivated to run is my life experience. We have legislatures who are passing laws that I think better match the evolution that we are experiencing as a society. But I just don't think our bench is there. Right. An example, and Dr. Hampton will appreciate this, domestic violence. We have our legislature that is broadening the application of that law, the Domestic Violence Prevention Act. We've seen domestic violence take on a new shape and new definition. It's not just about physical abuse anymore. The legislature is using coercive control. So anytime a person is coercive and controlling another party, that can be grounds for domestic violence. But we have judges that would never, ever agree with that. I've been in front of judges that absolutely refuse, unless and until you remind them that they're breaking the law, to find domestic violence in cases where there's no physical abuse. And that is not where we are as a society. That is not what we've evolved into, yet our case outcomes are still reflecting that society. So I think the more people that get involved, the more people that get engaged into these elections, the more evolution we're going to see in our benches, the more balance we're going to see from our bench, and the more reflection we're going to see in our court cases of the laws that are being passed. And so that's why I think this is, we're on the cusp of, I think, something historic. And I have great faith that the people are going to rise to the occasion to get it done.
Rhonda?
You know, I hate to bring up, or I'm hesitant to bring up the G word, but I will bring up Gascon. When you talk about judges, you know, refusing to be in accordance with the law, it brings to mind Gascon and some of the things that he's doing, which maybe he does or does not have the right to do that. Some of them are questionable to me. How then do you keep yourself in check? And I mean you. So when you're sitting, you know, in your judge chair with your cloak or your robe or your superhero.
Or my cape.
You know, sorry. Capes are cool, though.
Because there's a lot of power at the end of the day. When we look about Judge Gascon, when we look about the sheriff, and, you know, the power to me has gone to their head in some ways. It's my personal opinion. And I've been in the courtroom enough to know when the ego is on the bench and not common sense in the law. Like, how do you keep yourself in check and keep your personal agenda in check, even if it's not aligned with what the law says you should do?
Yeah, it's a tough one because people think that as soon as you put on a robe, your personality and everything disappears. Right. And I serve as a volunteer temporary judge. So a few times a week, in fact, I'll be on the bench this afternoon and tomorrow afternoon when you put on that robe, your job is to do the job, right? And that has nothing to do with your personal inclination. It has everything to do with the fact that if you don't do your job, there's going to be a lack of consistency in this system. And where there's a lack of consistency, I say there's injustice, because generally mm-hmm. the inconsistency is based on some personal bias or some personal feelings, right? Our law gives judges great discretion. You know, even in traffic court, I can dismiss any case, you know, under Penal Code Section 1385 that I find to be unjust. I can just dismiss it, right? Or in cases where I do decide that I'm going to find someone guilty, I have complete leeway on what I sentence them to. And so when I'm sitting there, I obviously, it's very easy for me to say, I'm going to see these people out in society. They're going to walk right past my car as they leave. I'm going to just put this to zero, right? Like 0000000. I think that it's easy to get there. But then when you think about the fact that there's no accountability, which means you're now telling that driver, it's okay to drive 100 miles an hour out there with our kids on the road, mm-hmm. right? It's okay for you to ignore the rules of the road because the judge is just going to look the other way. Despite what I feel personally about getting a ticket, I have a job to do that goes to the greater good of society. And that consistency, I think, is what creates the certainty and severity in the system that gives the trust that the public has to know that the system is actually working, right? So the best thing that we can do is follow the law, because those who are passing the law are the people who are closest to the democratic will. Our assembly is elected every 2 years. Judges are going to get on the bench and they're going to be there for 6 years. We don't know, 165 judges are up for election this term, right? But you're going to see an election, a ballot that has 9 seats on it, right? So we're not as closely connected as the people who are actually passing the law. And so if we're talking about a democratic society where we have the right to self-government and the people are the drivers, then that means the law needs to be best determined by those who are closely connected to the people, and then interpreted in such a way that is going to reiterate and reinforce the will of the people. And that I think is where the magic sauce for judges come into play. When you have people who get in and they decide to go against what it is that they were either elected to do or what their legal right is to do, then you lose that fundamental trust. And I think that's where we are with Gascon. I can't obviously opine on him or policies or anything like that as a judicial candidate. But what I can say is there's a lack of trust, because mm-hmm. we don't recognize what is being done and we don't have anything formal to compare that to, whether it's good or bad, right? Mm-hmm. And so following the law is an obligation we all have. And then when we all do it, I think we have better case outcomes. Mm-hmm. The last thing, and I can nerd out on this all day, but Justice Black, who wrote I believe it was the Brown versus Board of Education opinion, right? A KKK enthusiast and member. He was in the South. He was known, mm-hmm. a known racist, right? Mm-hmm. He sided with desegregation. And that's because when you put on the robe and you step into the job, your personal biases should go away and it should be about what the law says and how it applies in that particular case.
When Dr. Hampton said the G word, you know what I thought? I thought God. And then when she said Gascon, I'm like, no, I'm serious, brother. It's like, and I was like, Gascon, how did I miss the obvious? But one thing I like about you, and that you were active in your church from a young age, and you found strength in that. And, you know, okay. So to my friends and people who aren't into religion, you might groan at this, but I like this, and I'd like to give you a minute to just tell people, you know, where we can find you. And if you want to say anything about the G word, we're all ears. We got like a minute or two here.
You can find me at Thomas Allison for Judge. Come to the website, learn more about me. I believe my phone number is on it. Send me a text. Let's set up a phone call. Let's set up a coffee and let's chat. You know, my goal is to try and make myself as available as possible as a judicial candidate so people see it differently. Whether we're talking about Gascon or God, I think at the end of the day, we owe ourselves a duty to the collective good to make sure that we are fulfilling our roles consistent with what people want. And even as a, you know, devout non-denomination, I guess I'm technically belong to the Church of the Brethren, but I'm a Christian. You know, that has no impact on how I decide cases, aside from the fact that I think foundational in the Christian religion is the fact that everybody has a right to a voice. Everybody has a right to full agency. Everybody has a right to have their humanity reinforced at every element and aspect of the system. And that's what I'm going to be bringing with me. I'm going to be that connection between the court and the community. And I'm going to bring that balance that the bench so desperately needs.
Thomas Allison, I wish you the best of luck, man. This has been an absolute pleasure, and you are welcome back as our new judge.